Hello, and welcome to this podcast about the amendments to IFRS 17 project. Today, we'll be talking about the discussions that took place at the ISB's February 2019 meeting. My name is Laura Kennedy. I'm on the technical staff here at the ISB, and with me today is Daryl Scott, ISB board member and one of the lead board advisors on the insurance contracts project. At the February meeting, the board continued its discussions about possible amendments to IFRS 17 in response to concerns and challenges that have been raised by stakeholders as they've been working on implementing the standard. The discussions this time focused on two topics, the first being the scope of IFRS 17 and what that means for loans that transfer significant insurance risk. And following that, the rest of the discussion focused on various aspects of transition to IFRS 17. The board voted to propose a targeted amendment relating to each of those two topics. Daryl, could you tell us a bit more about how those discussions went?
Sure, Laura. So it was an interesting set of discussions that we had this month. As you mentioned, we covered two topics, but those two topics essentially pulled together six of the challenges that had been identified in our October's discussion 4 or 5 months ago. I'm not going to talk about all six, but I'd like to pull out a couple that I thought were really interesting in the context of the discussions we had. So the first related, as you mentioned, to scope. The board discussed the situation in which a contract contains an insurance element, but that insurance element is only for the settlement of some or all of the obligation that is created by the contract itself. Now, this typically happens with some loan contracts which contain a death waiver, where, for example, the outstanding obligation is waived on the death of the borrower. And so you have an insurance element that meets the definition of insurance under IFRS 17. The difficulty here, though, is that these contracts very often are sold by banks and other organizations that typically don't consider themselves to be in the business of insurance. Very often they have a small impact on the economics of the contract. And these other entities applying the standard are entities that typically are applying IFRS 9 to all of the rest of their contracts. And so the board agreed with a staff recommendation that what we would do with these contracts is we would provide an option for entities with these products to apply either IFRS 17 or IFRS 9 to the contracts. We did have a little bit of a discussion about the unit of account at which we would apply the modification. Staff had recommended that this be on a contract-by-contract basis, but having discussed it around the board table, the board concluded that it would be better to apply this at a portfolio level. And that would ensure more consistent accounting for entities that are actually applying the accounting and obviously for users who are trying to understand how that accounting has played out. So that was the scoped issue that we discussed. As you mentioned too, we also discussed transition issues, and I want to pull out two of the transition issues that we specifically talked about. The first of these was the discussion around the transition in the context of risk mitigation activities. Now, IFRS 17 is written at the moment, says that risk mitigation accounting is always applied prospectively, and that it is a free choice. That means that an entity will pick when it enters into a hedge accounting relationship whether or not to apply the risk mitigation requirements of IFRS 17 to that particular arrangement. Prospectively, because you need to do it at the beginning before you know what the outcome is. IFRS 17 continues that thought process into the way that we apply transition. So what it says is that when moving from your previous accounting practice to IFRS 17, at the date that you move across, the date that you first report under IFRS 17, you can apply risk mitigation accounting on a prospective basis from that date forward. Now, what we've heard back from some insurers who are going through the process and who have historically applied risk mitigation is that they would like to be able to apply this risk mitigation retrospectively, because they believe that that better portrays the economics. The board had some sympathy, I think, for that argument. I think we understood where insurers were coming from in that space. But in the discussion that we had at the board table, we felt that our real concern here was what we defined, I think, in the discussion as cherry picking. The fact that at the date of transition, the insurance company will already know what the partial outcome has been of their risk mitigation activities, and that that knowledge of what has already happened may influence the decision they make about which hedge accounting relationships to apply the risk mitigation accounting to. And we felt that not only would that mean that we may well end up in some circumstances with results that don't fairly reflect management's intent at the time that they entered into the arrangements, but it would also corrupt the view that others had about the robustness of the information they were getting. So investors would be skeptically looking at this, and so you would undo the effect that you had done by going through all the hard work of actually applying a transition methodology. The board didn't stop there. We discussed it quite a lot of length, at quite length, how we could go about resolving this issue, and whether there was a way that we could perhaps solve for the cherry picking concern that had come up, and in particular the way that we talked about it was whether or not we could in fact provide a all or nothing type of option in the standard. All in this case would mean that you would, if you elected to apply risk mitigation retrospectively, you would have to apply it to all of your hedge relationships. That answer would avoid the complication of cherry picking. It would mean that if you chose to apply it, it would be to everything. It would be consistently applied across the board. But in discussing this, the board recognized that very few insurers would be able to go backwards in time and establish and prove what their complete population was, what all really meant in that circumstance. And because of that concern, we felt that this wasn't a option that would provide a useful outcome for many or probably most insurers. And so in the end, the board decided in thinking about this that we would accept the recommendation of the staff not to make a change for retrospective accounting for risk mitigation transactions. So essentially, IFRS 17 remains unchanged. However, we did ask the staff to explore two ideas that had come up during the discussion. The first was to consider whether or not we could allow insurers to prospectively apply risk mitigation, but from a date earlier than the date of first application. And secondly, we asked the staff to explore whether there may be a solution outside of retrospective accounting that might assist insurers who are facing this particular issue. So that was the second big topic we discussed. The third one we discussed was around modified retrospective. And the way modified retrospective is written in IFRS 17 at the moment is that it allows for you to move away from the fully retrospective approach in certain very clearly defined ways. And those clearly defined ways are what we would refer to, I guess, as the allowed modifications. And we do that because we felt it was important from a board perspective, if we were looking at modified retrospective, that the outcome of modified retrospective still match as closely as possible a retrospective approach. Now, in the discussion that we had around the board table, we discussed a couple of specific additional acceptable modifications that had been recommended to us by constituents. And in particular, we specifically accepted a new modification that would be allowed as regards past acquisitions that an entity has done and how you would account for elements of those past acquisitions. The board did discuss a suggestion that had been made by constituents that we would allow them to choose the modifications, but we felt that doing that would create the problem that we would not be able to firstly be sure that those new modifications actually achieve the objective of sticking to the fully retrospective approach. And secondly, we felt that that would bring a whole lot of new diversity into this approach and again make the value of information that you obtain from this less useful from the perspective of a user of financial statements. So in the end, we agreed that we would continue with modified retrospective as currently defined with this one additional modification that we had agreed to. I think another important part of the discussion was, though, that we also discussed what the board considered a really important clarification, and that is, in applying these modifications, an entity is still allowed to apply normal estimation techniques in getting to the outcomes.
Okay, and so after those discussions, Daryl, where are we now on the project?
Okay, so we started with 25 challenges that we identified in October last year. We've now discussed those challenges at four meetings, November through to February. And in doing that, we've got through the bulk of them. We've pretty much discussed all of the topics. We expect that there will be a couple, at least one specific topic and a couple of additional issues that will come back for discussion at the March meeting. And that will then complete the core of the redeliberations that arose from the issues that were, the challenges that were identified in October. We expect that there will be a further, at least one meeting that kind of rounds off all of these topics, considers, for example, disclosure requirements that might have been introduced, and perhaps other sweep issues that may have come up through the process. And that would lead us to continue to view that we think we can publish an ED toward the end of the second quarter of 2019.
Thank you, Daryl. And thank you to those of you listening. We hope this podcast has provided you with a helpful summary of the ISB's discussions on IFRS 17, and we look forward to speaking to you again soon. In the meantime, if you'd like to stay up to date with the board's activities, you can do so by following the project at ifrs.org.